So I think I'm going to talk, give a share for about probably 20, 25 minutes on our topic this evening. And then I'll speak a bit about the community and Deborah Alper, who's here with us, and Yossi, who is maybe getting pizza, I guess, yeah. Most importantly. So we'll speak a bit about the community. So, but first, I'd like to share words of Torah. First of all, it's great to see Ahava. It's great to see all of you, but I have to say I'm a little biased. Great to see Ahava, my daughter. I love the interaction of medicine and halacha and medical ethics. So I thought it would be fun to talk to medical school students or spouses about a medical ethics topic. So I want to speak to you a little bit about a Torah's perspective on genetic engineering insofar as genetic engineering for human beings in terms of modifying genetic material to achieve certain goals for human beings. What do you think? Do you think the Torah would permit it? I think right now, I'm not sure if the technology is there yet, maybe for certain things, but it's something that could be in the future. What do you think the Torah's perspective would be about modifying genetic material of human beings? Do you think Torah would be for or against? What's your initial inclination? What? Kilayim. You're saying genetic could be kilayim. I'm not sure. Kilayim. That's interesting. From an ethical standpoint, are there any kind of, I don't know, cases perhaps? Think about how the Torah. How do you think the Torah would feel about? Pro gets what?
For medical purpose.
Very good. Okay, so what are you saying? So you want to say you want to make a difference. What's the purpose? Yeah. Right. So by the way, once you talk about the purpose, is that a halachic question or is that a hashkafic question? You understand what I'm saying? In other words, are we saying that maybe you can do it from a halachic perspective, maybe only for medical purposes, but not to create, like a superhuman, I guess, like a superman or whatever? Or is it maybe it's all out, but it's a hashkafic issue, right? That's it, right? Any other thoughts initially? Okay. I haven't thought about the kalim issue. I'm not sure. I have to think about that. So again, there is literature on PGD, which is pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. And just the first source is PGD is performed. This is from the, the PUA website. The PUA deals with, is an organization that deals with fertility. It's a halakhic, it's run by Rav Borstein in Eretz Yisrael. And they write that first off, PGD can only be performed in conjunction with IVF. As in all IVF, an egg is fertilized in the laboratory and allowed to grow for a few days before the fertilized egg is reintroduced into the mother. One or more cells are removed from the egg. The DNA of the extracted cell contains information about the way the egg will continue to grow and develop. In PGD, the DNA of the extracted cell is expanded and analyzed to see if this specific egg has the characteristic we are trying to find. So if the fertilized egg contains the desired characteristics, the IVF procedure resumes and the egg is reintroduced or implanted in the mother with the hope that she will become pregnant and carry her child to birth. PGD can be used as a tool to identify thousands of characteristics. If the DNA marker for a characteristic has been identified, we can search for that specific marker to guarantee a desired outcome. As such, we can not only use PGD to prevent genetic illnesses, you could also use it maybe to determine gender or eye color. Right, so I think on the surface, so you do IVF, so in the lab, again, you're not genetic engineering, I understand, is you're modifying the genetic material. Here, you're not modifying, you're just diagnosing, and maybe you're diagnosing, you're seeing, oh, this child is going to have blue eyes, or this child is going to be a boy or girl, or this child is going to be, has a certain, genetic illness. So, could be that I think our inclination, I think, when it comes to, say, you mentioned medical, right, issues, you know, genetic illness, we would see our initial reaction maybe is more in favor when it comes to the blue-eyed, I want a blue-eyed child, a blonde hair, whatever it is, so that maybe we're not as excited about. I don't know where gender comes in. I don't know where that comes in. So Torah, there are cases. So we'll study a little bit about what halacha had to say about some of these cases here. So I think like the first question here is this type of treatment, is PGD treatment, is that a type of medical treatment which is sanctioned by the Torah? Now, you might argue that what? That all medical treatment is sanctioned by the Torah, right? What's the famous pasuk? Rapo Yirape, right? So Rashi there says, right, the Torah gives permission for us to treat someone, to medically treat someone. So there is the famous nose job machlokas. Are you aware of the nose job machlokas? The famous question, you know, presumably someone wants cosmetic surgery. Anyone going into that field? Okay? Well, don't worry, I'll make sure we'll end up with a good result. Don't worry. But the question is cosmetic surgery halachically permitted? When the Torah says v'rapo yirape, and we'll see then, we'll analyze this debate and see how that might impact on PGD. Right? So, is cosmetic surgery permitted? So, the Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Elazar Waldenberg, he was a major posek in the last century, and he wrote a lot of tshuvos. And he writes here in Chelak Yudav Simon Mem Aleph, he says the following. He cites V'davar Gadol Hashmeinu Hagaon Bal Sharei Tzedek. So he cites this rabbi named Rav Menachem Panei. He was a great rabbi in the 19th century, and he makes the following argument. He says B'toras Rishus Haripoy. He says when it comes to the permissibility the Torah gave us to heal, Unehi Divinogel Laripoy Akaros. So he actually cites this Rav Panei who felt that a doctor is not allowed to engage in fertility treatment. So not the Tzitz Eliezer, this Rav Panei felt, why? Because he felt that's not considered medical treatment. Okay? And look what this, so he says, Nira Lefianis Daiti, the Devar of the Chuyim, he said, seems to me his opinion is rejected. That because there's a purpose in having children for the continuance of the world. Lola tohu bara wasn't created just to remain empty. So he cites the view of this rabbi from the 19th century who said that only refuah, medical treatments for refuah, are permitted. What's the definition of refuah? Not fertility. Because what's refuah? If you have a machla or a ke'ev, if you have a sickness or you're suffering. It's an interesting question, right? If someone is infertile, someone can't have children, are they considered sick or not? So how will you define what healthy means, right? Is healthy only pain or suffering, or maybe you don't function, you know, they know a body is supposed to do certain normal, regular things, and if you can't do those things, even if you're not suffering physically, you're not in pain, but that's still considered a choli. Right? It's an interesting question. The Tzitz Eliezer says, he says that I believe that treating infertility is refuah. That's the standard view. But then he says something else. He says, the next paragraph, again, I only wrote it in Hebrew. I apologize. Some of you may not know. I'm translating everything. He says, Ulam im benidon shal sharei tzedek mishum lahatir kafim min hangam shal yisho bazeh. He says, yeah, listen, I'm rejecting the sharei tzedek, this Rav Panei's argument. I think you can treat infertility. This is the custom of Klal Yisrael. Voyesh ledati hashlachot lechidusho zeh benogea lenituchim. What's the next word? What's the next word? Plastiim. You know what that is? Plastic surgery, right? In other words, I buy into the argument of Rav Panei. I buy into his argument that you can only treat medical treatments if it's medical. I disagree with his application. He thinks fertility is not medical. I think it is medical. But I buy into his argument that if it's non-medical, you can't engage in those treatments. That what they doctors treat, engage in plastic surgery for beauty. Sorry, the shame yipui evareham to beautify their limbs. V'chadoma be'ein shumachlo cave, where there's no sickness, there's no pain. No v'yesh makom gadol l'taina zos, and I have a major claim against this argument. Shelo al kagon dahu shenit na Torah reshus the rofei l'rapos. God and the Torah did not give the doctors the right to treat for this reason. Imafilu zenikra b'shem l'rapos. Is this even considered healing? Who said this is v'rapo y'rapay? This is not healing. Ve'ein reshus and they adam lo says the rofim lachbo ba'atzvam l'shem atarazos. No one's allowed to, you're not, the doctors are not allowed to wound someone, because you're causing an incision, you're wounding someone for this purpose. Vegam ein reshus the rotei levatzeazos, the doctor should not engage in this procedure. Look what he writes. Ve'yesh ledas ulamin, and you should know and you should believe. Ki ein sayar kelokeinu. There's no artist like a Kadosh Baruch Hu, like God. V'hu yisparach shemo tsar v'idbiya l'chol echad v'echad mi'itzurav b'tzamo v'idmuso haholem eslo. And God formed everyone according to his own form that's fitting for him or her. V'alav ein lahosi min ein ligro. Don't add, don't subtract. Tzitz Eliezer, if you want to get a nose job, Tzitz Eliezer. Nowadays it won't be a problem because we're wearing masks, but if you want to get it, right, you want to get a nose job, or whatever, any type of cosmetic surgery, you would not go to the Tzitz Eliezer if you wanted a positive response. If you want a positive response, and I don't necessarily advocate to go post-it shopping, but if you want a positive response, you would go to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And then you turn the page, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, Nishalti b'nara shirotu liyapos atzma, kadei sheyikfetsu ole lekacha aydema she... He says he wants to know about a young girl. She wants to beautify herself to make her more marketable on the shidduch for shidduchim. And is cosmetic surgery permitted? And what's interesting, Moshe finds he doesn't even deal with the refuah issue. He deals with the issue, is this considered wounding? And he goes on to say that he quotes the Rambam, and the Rambam basically says that the only type of wounding that is forbidden, what he calls derech nitzayon or derech bizayon, some kind of destructive kind of wounding. And obviously, if you're engaged in surgery for the purpose of beautifying yourself, that is constructive kind of wounding, and therefore would be permitted. What's interesting, Rav Moshe doesn't even deal with, it's not refuah. Rav Moshe finds, it assumes that even for cosmetic surgery, it is considered refuah. Let me say, if you think about just these two different worldviews between the Tzitz Eliezer versus Rav Moshe Feinstein in terms of cosmetic surgery, so then I guess how might you apply that to PGD for testing or diagnosis for perhaps a genetic disorder versus color of eyes versus... Right, gender. So, how would we come out based on this debate here? So, what would you say?
It might be impossible between who was the first one, the Tzitz Eliezer or Moshe. The medical. I mean, if there's a sickness involved,
right,
trying to diagnose something, then I think both of them would say.
Yeah, yeah. It was so. In other words, it would seem that if you're engaged in PGD. For the purpose, and exactly right, if you're engaged in PGD for the purpose of a genetic, genetic illness, then it would seem to be that Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Moshe, from a refuah standpoint, from a treatment standpoint, would probably say it's okay. If once we're talking about gender, maybe, blue eyes, blonde hair, whatever it is, then maybe this might be a halachic debate, although it's not clear as Tzitz Eliezer against it. Hashkafic, he would probably say it might not even be refuah, maybe. So there, you might have that debate. I'm not saying that Rav Moshe Feinstein would allow it, but it would seem almost for sure that Tzitz Eliezer would not allow it. That's what it seems. Yeah, what do you think?
What would be the isser involved? Is there an isser havala on an embryo?
Right. So again, so the Tzitz Eliezer might say, we're going to discuss the potential Isurim, but I'm saying it might not even, so there are a couple issues, right? Is there an Isur Chavala? Is it a prohibition of wounding? And the other issue is, are you allowed to engage in that refuah? Like, you're making an assumption that, because we're used to it, that doctors can treat anything. Tzitz Eliezer says, no. The allowance to engage in refuah might only be for something that's medical and not cosmetic. So he might say that you can't even, you forget about Chavalah, you don't even get off the ground, because this is not refuah that, this may not be defined as refuah, or this is not refuah that's permitted by the Torah.
Why can't you engage in refuah? It's not like it's because it goes against God's will.
Yeah, maybe not. Right, you're right. It goes against, right. That's the argument, right? Because we don't say, the Torah gives you allowance to do refuah. So you'd say, why not? Let's say, because there are other types of refuah that don't involve wounding, potentially. So it might be, right, this is a very, you might have argued a very deterministic perspective. This is what God wants. This is the way God created the world like this. And you're not supposed to mess with it. So what's the response for Rapa Yerapa? No. For medical, something medical, so then you are allowed to do it. You have a heter to do it. Maybe you're obligated to do it, maybe. But when it comes to something that's cosmetic, you can't play God. Whatever the hashkafa is, but it's probably what the hashkafa is, but you don't have that halachic allowance, a permissibility to engage in refuah. So,
I'm having like a little bit of a tough time sort of equating the two cases,
because
you're calling PGD refuah, but I'm having a difficult time calling that refuah at all, because what you're doing is you're testing, and if that comes out positive, throw away the embryo. There's nothing we can do right now to fix that problem.
Right.
Because if you throw away that embryo, you implant a different one. So you're not actually doing any refuah at all.
Right.
You're just looking for something, and if you find it, you throw them away, and if you don't find it, you implant it.
So therefore you would say that...
I mean, I would say the real question, ethically, of PGD is, is this thing alive? And if so, are you allowed to kill it? Because that's what you're really doing. You're either killing it or you're implanting it.
But what gives you the right to even perform this diagnosis, this testing? So I'm saying maybe, I hear what you're saying. In other words, if it's different in the lab versus inside the woman. You know, what gives you the right to even engage in this process? Is that defined as some kind of refuah, right? So I'm saying maybe. I hear what you're saying, right? But that could be, it could be related to that question. Your point that you, what's your name?
Noah.
Noah. So Noah's point is, so what's the issue, right? So let's say we say you're allowed to treat, let's say for there's a medical issue, you're allowed to treat it. The other question, not sure, maybe depends on emotion versus Siciliezer. So are you allowed to destroy a fertilized egg? Because that's what you do. You do IVF, you take this fertilized egg and then you analyze it. If it has some kind of genetic deformity that's, is an issue, then you just dispose of it. So is that a life form? Right? So there could be two different issues. Number one is it a life form that you're allowed to destroy a life form? And the other issue is it's simply maybe hotzah zera, destroying the life potential material. There could be two different issues. If you look here, and then the Gemara in Yevamos Daf Samach Tesamad Aleph tells us that a daughter of a Kohen, so as long as she, so the Kohen eats Truma, right? Kohen eats Truma. The daughter of the Kohen is allowed to eat the Truma, just like her father. The daughter of the Kohen gets married, she could still eat the Truma, but let's say she marries a Yisrael, a non-Kohen. She could still, right? You know, what do? You come to my house, what do? You raid the fridge, right? That's what you do, right? You come to my house, you raid the fridge. So let's say I was a Kohen, okay, and I have all this Truma in my house, so you want to raid the fridge. So you can't raid a fridge anymore, because Baruch Hashem, you have two beautiful children. So we would not be allowed to raid my fridge anymore. Why? Because a Bas Kohen, a daughter of a Kohen, once she marries a Yisrael, and she becomes pregnant, so the Mishnah says, I think it's the Mishnah, Yivam Staf Samach Tesamad Aleph, so Yisrael Shebal Bas Kohen, Tocha Bitruba, if she, let's say, gets married, or she's intimate with Yisrael is intimate with a Bas Kohen, she can still eat the Truma. Ibra, but once she becomes pregnant with a child, so then she's disassociated from, in a sense, from the family in which she grew up, and then she is not allowed to eat truma. So Rav Chista says, Toveles Volcheles Ad Arbaim. So she's allowed to go to the mikvah, and key here is, she's allowed to eat until she is 40 days pregnant. Why? Because Ad Arbaim Maya Ba'amahi. So until the baby or the fetus is 40 days old inside the mother, it's halachically insignificant. It's like maya ba'alma. Presumably, it's not considered living. So this obviously is a very important source when it comes to the abortion debate, which is not the topic for tonight, but there's obviously a relevant source. And certainly we would argue that until 40 days, based on that, you're not, if you destroy the fertilized egg, the embryo, in the petri dish in the lab, because the genetic material is a problem, then it would seem to be permissible. It's or from that perspective, because it's not a living thing. There's also a halacha that hotzash zera levatala, that releasing zera seed is sperm is for levatala for no reason is forbidden. Right, it's a very serious sin, but obviously the argument is it's not for nothing, because what are you doing? You're actually releasing, the husband releases the zera, the wife releases the egg in the context of IVF, and that's for the purpose of having a child. So presumably that's not a problem, and that's why poskim, for the most part, as I think we know, that poskim for the most part believe that you are allowed to engage in PGD for the purpose of a genetic disorder. Now, there probably is some question about like how certain you have to be or how likely it is to have the genetic disorder for you to test. In other words, let's say someone, they're not a carrier for, you know, of any kind of disease, but they're just nervous. Is PGD, is that something that's appropriate? Or to what extent do you have to have some kind of history so that we could discuss that? But in general, when it comes to, like, I have three different categories here, right? I have genetic disorders, gender, and the supermodel, right? So the genetic disorder, so that seems to be permissible, again, probably according to Rav Moshe, also according to Tzitz Eliezer, it's medical, it's not a life form yet, it's less than 40 days, and it's, and by the way, there's a poskim will also say it's even less problematic because it's not even inside the woman, so it's even less problematic in terms of life form. And then it's not levatol, it's not outside of levatol, because the purpose was to have a child, right? So what about gender selection, okay? What about gender selection? That's where it gets interesting. So there's some interesting cases here. So I have here that sometimes, of course, gender selection could also be for medical reasons. And what do I mean by that? What do I mean by that? What? Right, very good. Right. So this is a tshuva from B'mare HaBazak. So that there's a kol Eretz Chamda in Eretz Yisrael, and they put out a series of, you know, shilos tshuvos. And here in volume 5, page 205, writes here Basher li shimush bidrachim eila kedei likbo'as min ha'ubar. So if you try to determine the gender of the fetus, mutar adavar kasher huba limnoa machla tur shatit. Hakshura, what's the next word? The chromosome hazachrich X or X, I think in Hebrew. I think it's X in Hebrew. I don't know. Kigon machalat hemophilia, right? So hemophilia is a sex-linked disorder, and so therefore you would be allowed to engage in gender selection. This is from Shlomo Zalman Orbach. He cites. You're allowed to engage in gender selection, but that's really the same thing as medical, because you want to make sure that you want to minimize the chance that the child is going to have this sex-linked disorder, so you want to have whatever the other gender is to minimize the chance. So that's okay. Now, what are some other reasons? What are some other reasons? So again, when it comes to having the supermodel, I don't think any poskim will say this is permitted. What about gender? What reason might there be to have a certain gender? So maybe puravu, right. So the question is that a legitimate reason to have, is that a legitimate reason in order to engage in PGD? See, there's a big problem. You read the secular ethical literature here, like, you know, it could create, you know, sexism, you know, like favoring one gender over the other. It's not so simple, okay? So what's interesting is that there's Gemara Nida, Daf Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, which basically says, again, I don't know if it's scientifically accurate, but they talk about the way couples are physically intimate can determine what gender they have. Now, I don't know if it's scientifically accurate, I'm not sure, but the point being is Rabbi Bleich has an article, and he says, based on this, we see the Torah is not against, it's his view at least, the Torah is not against doing something to try to have a certain gender, but it has to be the normal way. So PGD is not necessarily the normal way. That's his view based on this. But then we have, to have a mention, you know, you have the, there's a mitzvah puravu to have a boy and a girl. So maybe, is that mitzvah sufficient? If you're really saying that really halachically it's okay, but hashkafically it's not appropriate, you know, because of these ethical concerns. So is the mitzvah puravu enough? Or do we say maybe not? Maybe the mitzvah puravu is, okay, you have to try to have a boy and a girl, but if you're not obligated to use any methods outside normal ways of a couple trying to have children in order to have a boy and a girl. And since you're not obligated to do that, then maybe this is not, there's no pressure that you should engage in this. So I want to share with you, there are a couple articles that I read that discuss this topic. And there are three cases here, so we'll talk about them, where there have been poskim who allowed gender selection, but there are unique cases. So the first is the sperm donor yichud case. So what's the sperm donor yichud case? So the couple couldn't have children. So what happened? They had a non-Jewish, generally when it comes to a sperm donor, it's better, halakhli, for not our topic. You can invite me next year, I'll talk about that topic, okay? So, just putting it out there. So, if you don't all move to Oceanside, so then I'm coming back next week, and next year we'll do a topic on that. But, so, you have a non-Jewish sperm donor, okay? So, what's the halakha, by the way, if you have adopted parents, right? You have parents adopt a child. Or let's put the different case. Let's you have a couple that's a man and woman marry each other, but they have children from a previous marriage. So is the step parent, are they allowed to hug their children? Is there an issue of yichud? Is there an issue of negia? Yes, no, maybe?
Yes.
There is an issue. So this, sometimes the safest answer is a machlokas. But okay, so I'll tell you, there are three views. So one view is that it's just aser. Okay, Lubavitcher Rebbe, by the way, said it's aser. You know, he didn't have any children, he didn't adopt any kids. Lubavitcher Rebbe, among others, say there's a problem of yichud, there's a problem of negia. The leniency is only if it's a biological parent, right? So it's aser. But Moshe says, as long as the other spouse is alive, there's enough psychological pressure that the parent's not going to act inappropriately with their stepchild when their spouse is alive. And when they're still married, so Moshe is lenient. And since Eliezer says, if you adopt, let's say you adopt a child when they're a little baby, I'm not sure, I forget how old, but when you're very young, like you adopt a baby, then because you raise the child, there's not enough of a concern of doing anything inappropriate, and therefore he would permit it. So many, many people who adopt children or they come from blended families, they perhaps rely on since Eliezer, they rely on Ramosha. Let's say you want to be Machmir. Right? Let's say you come from a tradition, you're machmir, you're strict like Lubavitcher Rebbe, right? And so in this case, you would say yichud is aser. So then you would want to gender select for what? In this case, if sperm donor is not Jewish, you want to gender select for, you have 50-50 chance of getting it right, the boy, right? You want a boy, right? Because if you have a boy, cause if you have a girl, then the father is not the halakhic father of the child. And then there's an issue of yichud. Life is much simpler if it's a boy. Now again, you could say, well, be lenient. In other words, so take a lenient view. But I want to take the strict view. So there's a case where Posek basically allowed gender selection in this case. Another case, second case, let's say the father is a Kohen. Right? So let's say the father's a Kohen. So again, you always have these situations. The father's a Kohen, and the child is adopted, when they're young. So then, like, is it embarrassing that the child, the father's called as a Kohen, the child's not called up as a Kohen? So again, okay, at some point, the parents are going to have to tell the child you're adopted, or in this case, let's say it's a sperm donor. So at some point, you may have to tell the child that, I'm not your halakhic father, right? So in this case also, can you engage in gender selection for to make so that it's a girl, so that you're not going to run into these problems. So it's interesting, I think in this article he said he went to, this is an article in Tradition, I cited where the article is. So I think the author went to Rav Lichtenstein. Rav Lichtenstein sort of like, he gave a heter, he said, I'm not sure if it's a wise decision, but he sort of said perhaps one could be lenient. Yeah, what if you have five children of one gender? Okay, so what's interesting is that, there's a report that Ravadi Yosef, if there were six children of one gender, and the person does not want to have another child unless you can engage in gender selection, he allowed it. And Mordechai Eliyahu was much more makel. He said, five children, you could do it. Five children of one gender, you could do, next child, I could do gender selection. It's not clear to me, though, because I saw this, and there's also this Babari Habazaki cited this, but I also saw in the Machon Pua website where they quoted a case where someone had five children, and the father was so depressed if he'd have the same gender. It was like a psychological issue. If he'd had, you know, so I'm not 100% sure whether this was a case where, okay, you need to fill Puravu. So if it's as your Puravu, so maybe if you have one child, then just do PG for the other child. Maybe we're nervous from a meta halachic issue. We generally don't allow to do that. So if you have a lot of children, so maybe it's a meta halachic issue. Maybe is this really a case of serious depression? So what's interesting is that, I look at these like three different cases. You have like the genetic illness, so that all the poskim, for the most part, are lenient. You have the case of the supermodel, where poskim say absolutely not, and the gender selection, where it's sort of in the middle. And I think this is really a beautiful case study, the topic of PGD, where, and again, eventually, there might be, I think it's a little unclear from the literature whether it's possible to engage in genetic editing for humans. I'm sure you know about this more than me. That's not my field. But if it comes to be, I think it's interesting that, on the one hand, this is a great example. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, wonderful tools and wisdom and really wonderful tools to embrace the world. And the message of the Torah is do it productively. So we use the great science that we have, but you have to do it for the right way, not for the wrong values. And that's really our challenge of how we embrace the wonderful world that HaKadosh Baruch gave us with the wisdom that HaKadosh Baruch places in our minds, and we use it to do our avodas Hashem in the most meaningful way possible. So that is...